keeps going. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool, cool. All right, so ready?
Yeah.
A lot though.
Hey everybody, my name is Reverend Brian Blair. You are with me here on Crossroads, the show we have every week on WHUS 91.7 here in Storrs, where we ask our guests the same question, but it's a great question. Where does your faith life intersect with your everyday life? And we have our guest today, Chris Hefner. Hi, Chris.
Hello, hello.
Chris, I will get to him in a second. I'll let him introduce himself. Actually, at the beginning of the show, I always have some announcements. The only announcement is an event coming up in April, and it is the local steeplechase, which is a big deal around here. It goes to benefit any number of charities, one of them being WAIM, the Wyndham Area Interfaith Ministry. The steeplechase is a charity ride or walk. It's a 5-mile walk if you don't want to ride. There are different lengths for the bike rides. It is on Saturday, August 17, 2019, rain or shine. It starts out at the ECSU Athletic Complex in Mansfield, Connecticut. What you want to do is Google it, find some website, figure out how to sign up. I'm sure you'll be able to do it. And have a lot of fun. It goes to a really good cause, to a variety of charity organizations in the area, in particular the one I mentioned, WAIM, the Wyndham Area Interfaith Ministry. So if you like cycling, running, walking, take part in that, or if you just like helping. My guest here, Chris Hefner. Chris, do you have anything that you're working on that you might like to announce?
Yeah, so I will be telling you very shortly that I am a researcher here at the University of Connecticut. Right now, we're looking for participants for a project where we're looking at the language abilities of people who've had a stroke and have problems with language. What we really need are people who have not had a stroke and are not having problems with language to participate in our experiments. So we're looking for, generally speaking, folks above the age of 45, no history of hearing loss, no sort of neurological impairments. And if you're interested in that, you can email UConn Myers Lab, MYERSLAB at gmail.com, or you can call 860-486-0931 and see if you are eligible to participate. But for these studies, you're coming in, you're doing things in the lab, you're getting paid, and you're helping improve the lives of people who have had a stroke or improve the lives of people who have Parkinson's disease. Because by coming in and participating, you're telling us more that we can use as a comparison so we can make the lives of those people better.
Well, that sounds like a good thing to do. So why don't we get into that? What is it that you do here at UConn, Chris?
Yeah, so I'm a postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Speech, Language, and Hearing Sciences. So if you don't know what a postdoc is, postdocs are sort of full-time research positions after your doctoral program, hence the post part of postdoc, but before a future faculty job. So it's sort of an in-between stage where I'm still being mentored and I'm still learning things from someone else in my lab, the PI, the head of the lab, who's a professor. At the same time, I have a lot of independence and a lot of say in what I'm doing. So it's actually a pretty nice time in my academic career.
Very nice. But you would consider yourself to be a neuroscientist?
Yeah, so neuroscientist is one job title, linguist is another, speech scientist is another. One of the perils of being interdisciplinary is that I have lots of hats I can wear, sometimes simultaneously. It's a good look, I think. But
that's funny you call it a peril. So this study that you're doing in particular, what would you categorize yourself as for the person helping with this study? Which hat are you wearing?
Which hat am I wearing? I'm wearing both the neuroscientist hat and the speech scientist hat. So the idea is we're really interested in learning about how speech sounds work inside the brain. And so one way we can learn about that is by looking at people who have had a stroke. But of course, to learn things about that way, we also need to learn something about people of about the same age who haven't necessarily had a stroke. So that's why it's sort of combining those two hats of both someone who studies neuroscience and someone who studies speech.
Well, do you have any particular area that you're very interested in?
Yeah, a lot of what I work on is figuring out how people learn things about speech sounds and languages. So if you ever have to yell at Siri and Siri has no idea what you're saying, Siri's probably having a hard time learning things. She's probably having a hard time. Maybe you speak with an accent, or maybe you're not a native speaker of English. So Siri's having is having trouble figuring that out. So a lot of the research I do focuses on basically understanding how people are able to understand things so well, even when the best technology we have sometimes has troubles. So I focus especially on learning new sounds in a second language, so learning which sounds are the same and which sounds are different when other people are talking, and also adapting especially to how fast other people are talking at. So certainly as a New Yorker, you're probably a fast talker.
No. What do you mean,
slow.
Like slick?
No comment on exactly which meaning of fast talker I was using there. But basically, I'm interested in how people adapt to that sort of variation. So those are the sort of studies that I'm interested in. You might do something like that if you come into UConn. So feel free to email UConn, UConn Meyerzab, MYERSLAB @gmail.com, or call that phone number that I'm too lazy to take out of my pocket right now.
Yeah, I get you. All right.
And
well, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And the show asks our guests each week, what do you do and how does that intersect with your faith life? So the follow-up would be, how would you consider yourself to be a person of faith?
Yeah, so I am a practicing Christian. I grew up in a generally non-practicing family until I turned about 9. We started going to a Methodist church. I grew up Methodist, went to a Methodist church in undergrad at Michigan State University. Then I went to the University of Maryland for my PhD, where I went to an Episcopal church. And now here in Hartford, I worship at a UCC, United Church of Christ Congregational Church.
Well, all right, so that's switching types of church a few times. Do you have a philosophy and an approach to why you choose the kind of church that you do?
Yeah, so for me, I think the main approach, so I certainly consider myself a Christian. That's the faith tradition that I was raised in, and that makes sense to me and works for me. So for me, it's finding within sort of that Christian framework the right churches that fit me. And what I found really works for me, at least in my church in Maryland, my church up here in Connecticut, is finding churches that have a great community. So I'm a little bit of a denominational mutt. I've moved around between these different groups, Methodist to Episcopal. I'm descended from Irish Catholic folks, Scotch-Irish Presbyterians, Methodists, and I'm sure all my ancestors were frowning at me when I decided to go to this Anglican church, basically. It is what it is. And then up here in Connecticut, what I've really striven to find is churches that are welcoming and have a strong community aspect to them, where you walk in and you feel like everyone, it's like you're a long lost family member coming back into the fold.
That's nice.
And it's been great. I mean, both my church in Maryland, my church up here, it's like, I was some friend that they hadn't seen for 20 years and I just walked in and I felt right at home. So those are the sort of places that I really seek out. And consequently, they tend to be, because they're such friendly, welcoming places, they tend to be growing churches, which to some extent in sort of the mainline Protestant world isn't always the case. So it's also makes me happy to be part of a healthy church that's growing and improving.
Well, I'm sure you are part of that health and well-being and improvement. I'm sure they're glad to have you.
My beard at least is probably new. They don't have a lot of hipsters in the churches necessarily. So, that's good.
Well, this is the show about the intersection, right? So as a person who does neuroscience, do you feel like your faith has informed your decision to move in that direction?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I wouldn't say that I was, praying one night in high school and then God came to me in a vision and was like, here's what an MRI is. And you should know something about linguistics, by the way, too. That wasn't quite how I experienced it, but for me, I see it as sort of an outgrowth of the gifts that I was given. So The idea being that I am a curious person. I tend to be a very sort of diligent and scheduled and planned person. I have all these gifts and these abilities that make academia and doing research and being a scientist a really good fit for me. So over time, it was sort of me coming into those abilities and coming into the ideas I had about what made me successful, and realizing that one direction that would be pointing me towards is being a professor and doing research and teaching classes and mentoring students, because I have these things I've been given that make that a good fit for me. So rather than God speaking to me directly and saying, like, here's exactly what your purpose is, it was sort of a process of discernment of me figuring out what's the best way for me to use these gifts I've been given and combine them in a way that I can make, I can do good for the world and give what I've been given back and hopefully even greater than what I've got.
Well, you're using the term gifts, and for Christians, that's a really loaded term. And one of the things I think is behind the idea of gifts is the notion of gratitude, mm-hmm. which, of course, is also fits in with humility. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about gifts or you talk about your gifts, where do you get that sense from?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like I said, my family wasn't very religious when I was young, so certainly must have started sometime either late elementary school or middle school. But that's certainly something I think the Methodist tradition does a very good job of imparting on you, is you are here to go out and do good things in the world. You're not supposed to just stay cloistered in your little bubble. You're supposed to actually go out and be volunteering. You know, the youth groups I was involved with were constantly going and doing service projects. There was the church I grew up in Minnesota. It had monthly projects where we as a congregation went out and did things. The idea being that, you know, you're supposed to use these gifts you've been given to be able to make a positive good on other people's lives, not just on your own. And certainly, I mean, I've always been involved with youth ministries, things like that, helping out with high schoolers and middle schoolers. And I certainly know that's a very frequent lesson plan, is talking about, you know, everyone has their purpose, and everyone has a different purpose. We're all different organs in sort of this organism of God or Christianity, where we each have our different functions, but then we are all contributing as a whole to making the world better.
Body of Christ.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you both read the same thing.
there's some book out there that maybe some you're book. And I, some bestseller. I don't know.
Yeah, it's still a little popular.
Harry Potter. I think
it's something like that. Exactly.
I've been listening to Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. I don't know if that's podcast
listening,
you listen
eh?
to. But Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is this podcast by two former Divinity School
okay.
students.
Oh,
where
really?
Reading through Harry Potter using sacred reading practices.
Well, that sounds
it's
like a
great.
Very
let
funny
me just
idea.
Plug. Let me just plug this other
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, let's plug
here.
That.
But
oh, that sounds
stuff.
Fun. I would check that out.
Yeah.
All right. Not to get lost in Harry Potter,
of
although that
not.
Could be fun.
It could be.
All right. So, you believe that in some sense, you know, you just followed where your gifts led, and here you are mm-hmm. in neuroscience. So we know you're a neuroscientist, and you are a gay man who's out.
Yep, that's
okay.
correct.
So you're gay, and you're a neuroscientist, and you're a Christian, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like we're talking about like some superhero with three giant robots all come together, right?
A superhero, that's not something I've ever heard before, but I appreciate it.
We're going to make a T-shirt and a cape about that. So,
fabulous,
all right,
man.
I would say that we definitely live in a time where if you're gay and Christian, that doesn't always fit on the same page for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And also, not everybody appreciates... people who may be in the sciences appreciate religion, and not all people in religion appreciate the sciences.
Mm-hmm.
But you've managed to reconcile that into a way of life. How have you done that?
Yeah, so for me, I would say the word reconcile isn't really a word that's very comfortable with my own experience, what's been going on. I mean, for one, I feel very fortunate that I grew up in a family that was very accepting of sort of my sexuality as well as my career decisions and faith. I grew up in sort of churches that were generally, at the very least, not openly LGBT, if not completely open and accepting. So for me, that reconciliation, it's not really reconciliation so much as it is integration of those different aspects of my life. But certainly we hear a lot in society about how those facets of your life might be seen as being disconnected or might be seen as even opposing each other. And that hasn't really been my experience either.
Mm.
So how I see it is each of those aspects of my life informs the other, is well integrated with the other, where the idea being, you know, I can't be a good person of faith unless I am honest with my own sexuality and who I am and what my own identity is. And I can't be a good person of faith without having sort of a curiosity about the world and how it works and how God's creation sort of interacts with each other as people. I can't be a good scientist without also thinking about questions that science can't really answer, like what does it mean to be a good person, or why is there evil in the world? And I can't be a good scientist without being honest with myself and being completely at a point where I can accept myself and thus be able to ask big questions that I can answer. And I feel like my own experience, my own sexuality is sort of uninformed without recognizing that my sexuality is a gift from God. Like, I'm gay because God made me this way. And that, you know, that I have this scientific inclination that makes me curious and want to learn more about this sort of identity that I have in this community I'm in. So I think those three aspects of my identity work together. They work in harmony to help make me this complete person I am.
Well, you used the term integrated somewhere in there, and then you ended on the idea of harmony and being a complete person. Do you have any thoughts about that? Part of what the show is about is exactly that, where a lot of times what I see is that people do not are not fully integrated in the sense of they believe their faith life is over here and their everyday life is over there, and very rarely do the two mix. But you seem to have been very intentional about making sure to be as integrated as you could be. Where do you land on that? Where have you given that some thought?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. I come from a place of honesty, I think, is really the most important thing. Like, in order for me to be a good Christian, a good scientist, a good gay man, I need to be someone who's honest about that. And the fact is, these are aspects of my life that are all really important to me. So in order to integrate them, in order to bridge across them, in order to find harmony between them, I find that I need to be honest about each of those things in every aspect of my life. Now, I mean, that could be tough sometimes, and certainly certainly there are decisions that have to be made about, you know, if I'm chatting with some cute guy on some app, you know, do I have to say I need to wake up for church the next morning? Sorry. But
well, do you?
I do. Actually, I've just ended up, you know, I end up not really caring as much anymore. Maybe in my old age as a 28-year-old.
Ooh, but the ripe old age.
I know. But yeah, I've found that, you know, eventually it just comes to a point where in each of these aspects of my life, if you're not going to accept every part of me, then you're probably not someone I'm going to want to have any part of me communing with or connecting with.
Well, that sounds very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that answer, because I think a lot of people struggle with that notion of what I'm just going to loosely call it integration, because I know the term gets used in a variety of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the idea of being a whole person and integrating every aspect of who you are in a healthy way. So it does sound like you've given that a lot of thought.
I appreciate
that. And that you do your best to live in a an authentic manner,
mm-hmm.
which is not easy to do.
It's tough.
you mentioned some of the complications. You mentioned that one funny story about maybe you have to tell people once in a while, like, I'm getting up for church tomorrow, so I can't really hang out too late.
Yeah.
Are there any other things you can think of, instances where it was complicated to be integrated?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I see that actually quite a bit with my own Christian identity and with these other aspects of me. So certainly it's the case that there are some groups who feel like being a Christian is very hard in society right now. I'm not sure I agree with all of those aspects. But I have noticed, for example, you know, as a Christian, as a gay Christian, I hear quite a few other LGBT people say, you know, I can't believe there are people who are still religious. That's so stupid. That's so, you know, harmful.
It
things
is
like
stupid.
That.
No.
Well, that would be very. All right. Well, this is on a radio show, so you've heard it here first.
You heard it from the priest.
From the priest. You know, I remember when I was an undergrad, I was taking this class where there were final projects in the class. It was a psychology course. And one man in the class sort of gave stood up and presented his final project, which was very good and exciting and interesting. But one phrase he used is, you know, we are working on trying to help LGBT people move past their religion, which was such a strange concept to me as a gay Christian, rather than sort of trying to see how religion and homosexuality or LGBT status can intersect. And said the idea was, you're move in order to become a fully LGBT person, you need to move past religious experience. So you hear some of that. But at the same time, you can also find ways that there are these exciting intersections and exciting connections. Both my rector at my church in Maryland was a woman married to another woman, and my associate pastor here in Connecticut is a gay man. So I also have had really great role models for how to make those connections too, which has been really exciting to see and to experience.
You know, that's a really great point you bring up, the idea of having role models. I think that that helps with people knowing how to be a fully integrated person. If you don't see examples, especially in the complex things that some of us have to navigate their way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that's something I try to aspire. That's why I have a watch on right now that has a rainbow, you know, watch band. Just to always have that part of identity close by and sort of tell people, you know, who might need to hear it, that that's something they can do. So that's something I've even heard. I was the an usher at my church's Easter service this year. So I was lighting and putting out the candles, which I was a great responsibility to have on Easter Sunday. but apparently a friend of mine had brought a couple of friends with her to church. And she said they came and they talked to her afterwards. They said how much they enjoyed the service. And they're both gay men. And they said they were so excited to see someone happily wearing rainbows who was so actively participating in the service.
Yeah, good.
You know, wearing my identity on my
sleeve. Wait a second, though. If you wear it at church, that's about Noah's Ark.
Oh, well, I mean, hey, there had to have been some gay gene somewhere in that ark, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I saw something the other day about how... wait a second, you're saying that all those animals are on board that boat for all that time, but none of them mated? That, like, they came on two by two, but nobody came off three by three.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting point.
Exactly. So
so they must have all been gay.
Or like they were recessive genes or something. I mean,
all right. Let's ask the neuroscientist.
Let's get into the genetics of this.
Ask a neuroscientist about Noah's Ark.
Oh.
Well, let's say... All right, so you've given us a couple of good stories, right? Let's say, for example, you had a couple of minutes to actually talk to somebody who felt like being Christian and being gay were not possible, or maybe a Christian who had some sort of issue, you know, anybody religious. If you had a couple of minutes to talk to them, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question, trying to figure out exactly what I would say.
Have you been in that position before?
I haven't really been in that position before.
Good for you.
Yeah, I've been very I've been very lucky to be raised in churches and to have been in churches that I have not had to have many of those experiences.
Well, you know, how about this? Because you brought up gratitude and gifts before, and you just used the term lucky. And I threw a question at you that you haven't had experience with. Why don't we use what you do have? Can we go back for a minute to that idea of how you grew up?
Sure.
And how fortunate you feel about having grown up the way you did.
Yeah, no, so I feel very grateful then. I feel very grateful. You're being very pastoral here. I appreciate that. I feel very grateful then that I've been raised in a situation where I haven't had to have a lot of those experiences. I've had very few people tell me, you know, I'm going to hell. Just because of, you know, my sexual orientation.
I've probably had more people telling me I'm going to hell.
That's fair. I mean, you. I grew up in the Midwest, so no one would ever be that direct
exactly.
with me, of course.
There you go.
But I guess for me, what I would say I would want to have with the sort of conversation or experience I want to have with someone who would say that sort of thing I would want to take them to church with me. I mean, you said 2 minutes, so unfortunately services are about an hour at the church I go to right now, so maybe they can sit on 2 minutes of service or something. But I think I certainly think there are some people where their minds can't be changed in 2 minutes or in 20 minutes or in 20 days or in 20 years. But I think for a lot of people, they just haven't seen the way that faith and sexuality can be reconciled, seen the end process of that. You know, being at my church in Maryland, being at my church up here in Connecticut, both of them were churches where those conversations sort of, I'm sure, happened at one point, but now you see people openly and happily living integrated lives together between their sexuality and their faith. And to some extent, I think seeing that endpoint of what that process looks like can be a really constructive force. Again, like we were talking about earlier, the idea of role models, even for folks where they do not plan on becoming gay anytime soon, they might still...
Took me a second. I was like, what did he just say?
Yeah, well, funny. You know, but they might, for example, even if they're not gay, they might still appreciate seeing models of what successful integration looks like. And so for me, I think that would be sort of the most useful experience I could see with folks who are not having that, is come to my church, come see these couples worshiping together, come see, you know, the pastors preaching about, inclusion and things like that, and see how that sits and see how you feel about that once the service is done.
I think that's a great response, because that says you're not rejecting anybody. You're actually inviting them into the fold in a meaningful way, which I don't know if I've ever heard anybody give that answer. Usually it gets very adversarial.
Oh, dear.
And, yeah, oh, dear. There goes that Midwest again.
Oh, no. Oh, golly. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. But to say, well, my answer to you is come to my church and have this holy experience with me.
Yeah,
is a wonderful answer.
Yeah.
Well, what? Let's stick in with that. What would you say to people who are in the sciences who may have some sort of ill feeling about religion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that you do hear again with some frequency. You know. You hear scientific folks say, I can't believe how ignorant those people are, or things like that. For me, my reaction is maybe a little bit less, come sit on the pew with me, and a little bit more just sort of read a history book.
You just said you have less tolerance for scientists who have that sense of things than you do for people who are homophobic?
That is an interesting thing that you point out right now.
Hmm.
But I feel like maybe the experience of sitting in a pew would be something that'd be a little more foreign to some scientists than to homophobic Christians.
Okay.
I think in this case it's to appeal to the curiosity of scientific folks.
Mm.
But for them, I think the curiosity is going to be less sitting down in service, because they might not be familiar with that. A little bit more learning about the different names throughout the history of science who have been very strong Christians and also been very strong scientists. So, you know, we talked about genetics earlier. Gregor Mendel was a monk. I know one of the creators or the people who sequenced the human genome for the first time is an evangelical Christian. We see a lot of these very deeply religious folks who have made a lot of scientific progress throughout the years. I think that would be one place that I would start from, is just learn about the history of science and learn about the ways that it's connected. But I think another way that I see a bridge between religion and science is awe and wonder. There's a lot as a scientist I don't know, and there's a lot that I know that I don't know. And that's what makes me excited and makes me want to go to work every day, is to try to find those answers to questions I'm interested in that I don't know the answer to. I think religion in a lot of cases is very similar. Everyone has questions about, you know, what does it mean to be a good person, or what's my role in the universe, that as scientists we don't think we can really answer with scientific methods. But religion provides an avenue to be thinking about that, and theology provides an avenue to be thinking about that. And even if folks don't suddenly become theistic immediately from thinking about that, it's good to at least be thinking deeply and to realize that there are Christians and there are people of faith who also think about those questions deeply and try to reason through and figure it out and wrangle with these big questions. I think that's another venue that could be used to sort of bridge this divide that's perceived.
Well, everything that you've said in response to those tricky questions lean in the same direction of bridging divides.
Yeah.
So maybe we should get you a T-shirt with the three robots coming together. I bring these three seemingly different things together into one integrated person.
I would like that T-shirt.
Well, we're going to work on that, I think. We are out of time. It's been really wonderful talking to you. And everyone, we've had our wonderful guest today, Chris Hefner, who is a neuroscientist. Where are you heading after UConn?
So I will be here for the next year, and then I will be a assistant professor in the Department of Communicative Disorders and Sciences at the University at Buffalo in beautiful
Buffalo,
New York, the city of good neighbors.
So from cold to freezing.
I mean, I grew up in Minnesota, so Buffalo doesn't seem cold to
okay,
me. It seems snowy. Even by Minnesotan standards, Buffalo seems snowy, which is saying a lot, but cold, no way.
All right, very good.
Balmy.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, having you on the show. Everyone, this is Crossroads, the show where we ask our guests about the intersection of their everyday life and their faith life. We've been talking to Chris Hefner. We are on WHUS 91.7 Stores, and we are going to bid you all a very fond farewell. Flag around, but it seems to know me. Everybody pass me by.
Did you know one?
I liked it. Did you?